So I've been dying to tell you guys this story. Matt and Justin and I just got back from Guatemala. We've been setting up some stuff down there and going down every like 8 weeks, training some pastors and doing some church planting. And we got to visit this one new church plant in this one town. There's like five little families and they kind of meet in different homes in the town, and that's how they do church. And it was really cool. We got to go spend some time with them in this town. And when we were done sharing the word with them and just enjoying the service, we leave. And as we're walking out of their village, we look over and we see their like temple that's there. It's kind of like a Catholic temple, but it's a lot of like Mayan like gods and stuff influence in it. So it's like kind of weird mixed. And so as we're walking out, they're having like this crazy party. And we're like, what's going on over there? So we start to like just chill, like walk by it to see what exactly they were doing. And there's these like people out front and they're got those big pots, you know, of like incense and stuff they're burning and like all the smoke. And we're like dying because we couldn't breathe from all the smoke that's going on. And they're all like standing out there and they use that and they pray, and they're praying to these gods because apparently the next day they were about to plant all their corn. And so that night they were going to spend like praying and using their little things, and they decorate the church with all these like really cool palm fronds and stuff. It looks really sweet. And then they all bring stuff to lay on the altar that's like a gift for their gods so that this corn god will like help them grow their corn really well that season. And so all these people are doing that, and the head of this like little village church thingamajig comes up to me. He's about this tall, and I saw him coming because he doesn't like us. He doesn't like the gospel. He's never been very receptive. And he like just marches over to me when he sees us walking by. And he's this like short, little, chunky, shriveled up like Guatemalan man. He looks like a pygmy. He's awesome. He's like this big. And he marches up to me with confidence. He's just like, tuk, tuk, and I'm like, uh-oh, this is it. He's going to yell at us. He's going to kick us out of the village, whatever. And he just comes up, squinches up his nose, and looks right at me from like way down here. He's looking up at me, and I'm like, hey, what's up, dude? And what do you need? And he's like, yeah. And he was like, what were you doing over there? You know, and I'm like, well, you know, we're meeting with a church over there. And I was teaching them. And he's like, how come you don't visit us? And I was like, because I thought you'd like shoot me or something if I came over here. So do you want me to visit? He's like, yeah. So he invites all of us over and he takes us into their temple. And he's actually, it was like show and tell. He was so excited. This little like, he looked really mean when he came up, and then he like, his face lit up when he was like, come, I want to show you. And we're like, why are you being so nice? Are you luring us in there to like burn us or something? Like, what's, are we the sacrifice? Like, what's going on? So we go, and I'm like, all right, let's go find out. And he walks us in, and he's explaining like all the traditions of what they do. And so there's people out front like doing some weird whatever, and with their smoke, and he's talking about that. He brings us down the aisle, and he's showing us where they leave their like offerings or whatever. And people just brought random stuff from their homes and like all the way from this other town that's like a holy town. And he's explaining that. He's so proud of what they're doing. And he's like, and if you guys stay, we're going to stay up all night long and do our like rain Mayan corn dance thing. And you guys can watch the dance, and you can even dance with us if you want. And like, you don't want to see this white boy dance either. You don't want to see that. But we might watch. We might stay and just chill and see. So anyway, we go through this whole thing, and he kind of like just looks up at me. He's like, so you were teaching over there? And I was like, yeah. You know, I go over and I teach them, and we study the Bible. And he's not a big fan of the Bible, but he goes, well, how come you don't teach us? I'm like, what? Excuse me? Maybe I need to lower myself so I can hear you better. You know, like, I didn't get what he was saying. And he's like, yeah, when do you come back next? And I'm like, in March with a team. I get a bunch of, like, kids that are going to come with me, and they're going to, like, just rock it out and have a lot of fun. And he's like, okay. So he pulls out this little, like, ripped up little calendar book he had in his pocket, and he's like, okay, and he looks for the date in March, and he's like, you tell me what day, and he marks down a little date I told him. He's like, okay, that day, you come, and you preach to us. I'll get all these same people here. They come back, and you preach whatever you preached over there, because we want to hear it too. I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? So I'm going to get to go back and preach to the Mayan, like, crazy worshiping things, and they're going to hear the gospel, and I think it's awesome. And I didn't just share that with you tonight because it was an awesome thing that God did, and that is one thing. But also, as I thought about what God did, he really reaffirmed the passage that we're seeing tonight, and some of the truths that we're about to pull out of Mark chapter 2. So keep that story in mind, as God is just going to like blow our minds, because it's awesome. He blew mine with it. Mark chapter 2, we're at verses 13 to 17, if you get your Bibles. And see if this doesn't sound very similar to what just happened to us in Guatemala. I love it. God is awesome. All right. Verse 13, it says, he went out again beside the sea. This is Jesus. And all the crowd was coming to him, and he was teaching them. And as he passed by, he saw Levi, the son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax booth. And he said to him, follow me. And he rose up and followed him. And as he reclined at table in his house, Many tax collectors and sinners were reclining with Jesus and the disciples, for there were many who followed him. And the scribes of the Pharisees, when they saw that he was eating with sinners and tax collectors, said to his disciples, "Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners?" And when Jesus heard it, he said to them, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. I came not to call the righteous, but sinners." Now, as I think about this story, I think about just like being in that village and knowing that those people were kind of the people that you're like, no, we just got called out of that mess. Like, we just got called away from all those gods. What is Rob, after he just preached to us, doing walking into that church? And so I actually had to take time and explain to that church before I ever decided I would go over there what I was going to do, because I didn't want them to have this viewpoint of that's them and we're us and we're enemies and we don't talk to them because they don't know Jesus and we're going to sit in our happy little church and not even associate with them. And I had to help them understand that I wasn't converting either. Like, I wasn't going to go over and start praying with their little smoky things and dancing around with palm fronds. I was going over because I had a really important message to tell those people. I had the best news in the world, in the universe, to tell these people. And if I don't go over to that church and tell them, they're never going to hear it. But that's the key, is actually being able to go over where they're at. Loving them enough to say, yeah, that's not my culture at all. That's against really what I believe in. But I'm going to love you enough to be with you, to tell you this good news. Because I tell you what, if you're never with them, if I would never have stepped foot in that church, I guarantee you, they wouldn't be asking me to preach now. That's not because I'm some phenomenal speaker. They don't even know what I don't even speak Kikchi. Like, they don't know. It's because God put some awesome plan in order, and he's like, I'm putting you there. I don't care if you want to go or not, Rob. You're going. God does awesome stuff when you open your heart to him and when you really love people. And so as we're looking at this passage, you see Jesus, and he really loves people, and he loves them so much that he's willing to go sit amongst people that other people might critique them for. Then they might look at Jesus and be like, what are you doing? Why would you do that? So will you unpack this passage with me? We'll start in verse 13 and just look right from the beginning. Jesus is going to show us this awesome truth about living a gospel life, which is what we've been talking about. It says, he went out again. I love that, because Jesus is all about this mission. It doesn't say, and Jesus was chilling and picking his nose back in the tent. And you're like, Jesus was always out, wasn't he? Like, every time we see him, he is about the gospel. He's out going. He's out telling people. And you know what? It's kind of shameful when I look at my own life and I go, man, there are so many times where I don't take advantage of the opportunities God's putting right in my lap. Am I really about this gospel? I say I live a gospel life, but am I always outgoing? Could it be said of me, man, and Rob went out again. And Rob was out again. And like, put yourself in that situation and say, like, when was the last time I've even shared the gospel? When was the last time my heart was burdened to tell somebody this good news? When was the last time I was willing to take how scary this thing is and all this fear I have about doing it and push it aside and be like, no, Jesus is worth more than my fears. He's worth more than my comfort. He's worth more than everything. I'm going out again. Like, I pray that we be people like that. That we're really living gospel lives so much that we're always going. Like, that is just what we do. It's all about the gospel. And so Jesus does this, man. He goes out, and it says that he went beside the sea. Does anyone remember? We've already talked about this. Remind me, why is Jesus by the sea? V? Absolutely. So you need a big place when you have a whole lot of people that need to get together. And this was a big enough place that everybody could come around and actually be with Jesus. You know what that means? That means there's a lot of people. Yeah, there's a lot of people again. Like, these people are crazy. And look, all the crowd was coming to him. You see it? Like, all these people are coming to Jesus. As I was sitting in that little church, the one we planted, and I was sharing with them, I got the opportunity to share something with them. Why is this good news so good? And I just wonder, as I stood there in front of those five families, and I was sharing why the good news is so good, why does it make us smile, why do we even call it good news? I began to think, do we know that? Like, I'm sharing this across the ocean, or kind of down across the ocean, down up in the, anyway, whatever that is, down there in another country, in the middle of a jungle, with five families. But do the people that I spend every single Wednesday and Sunday with, can we all put that into words? Like, this is why we call it good news. Like, do we get it? Because as I sat there with them, I got to tell them why I thought it was such good news. Why does it make me smile? Why do I get excited every time I talk about this gospel? Why do we even call it good news? You guys know? Can somebody tell me why do we call it good news? It's living out what Jesus wanted us to do. What makes it so good? We don't go to hell. Hey, that's great news. You're not going to burn in hell. Like, that's awesome. You know what's even better is that you get to spend all of eternity face to face with the one who created you and loves you more than anything. Wow, what better place to be? This is incredible news. Incredible news. And when we talk about it, when we think about it, it should put a smile on our face. And it should be the word that we choose. Good news, because it's that great. Why do you think Jesus was always about it? Why do you think people were just flocking to him? He had to go find these places so just to fit the people in because it was such good news. Like I said before, he didn't have some traveling band go with him with all these lights and awesome things going on and a big concert and all this. He just taught. Look at the end of that. And he was teaching them. He wasn't like playing a violin so everybody would feel all like emotionally, oh, Jesus, you're so good at that, Jesus. Look at you playing a little piano. He's rocking it out on the piano. Let's all. He was just teaching them. Simple. They weren't comfortable. They're sitting out in the middle like by an ocean, just like on the ground, wherever they could find. It probably wasn't air conditioned and all this stuff. He's just out there. But you know why all these people are flocking to Jesus? Because he's worth flocking to. He's worth going to. And what he's doing is teaching the word. He's teaching them truth that they didn't have before. And you know what's really, really awesome about this? Is that these people were going the one place they would find an answer to the questions they had. The one place they would actually find a solution to the hurt that was in their heart. Find acceptance, real acceptance, not junk acceptance by friends who are just going to stab you in the back tomorrow. Real acceptance. They were going to the right place. And all he was doing was teaching. Teaching the truth, sharing this good news that we take for granted so often. And that's shameful. I'm just going to be straightforward with everybody tonight. That's shameful. If we can take this good news and treat it like it's garbage, we don't even get why it's good. I pray that there wouldn't be one person in this room tonight that can leave here and not understand why this is so good. Why we should treat this thing like everything, because it should be everything. That's what a gospel life is. So Jesus is doing this thing, man. He's doing his thing. He's teaching. Look at verse 14. And as he passed by, he saw Levi, the son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax booth, and he said to him, ready for it? Ready for this big speech he's going to give? Ready? Follow me. And he rose and followed him. Well, first of all, who's Levi? Anybody know? Who's this Levi guy? Levi Moyers? Are you here tonight? He's not here. Who's Levi? Anybody know another name for this guy? We studied him a few months back. Matthew. Ready? We did a whole series on Matthew. His Jewish name is Levi, which is why they're referring to him that way here. He's sitting there. Matthew is sitting. And where is he? At a tax booth. What's he doing in a tax booth? Well, I hope he's a tax collector. Otherwise, he shouldn't be sitting there, right? So if you're selling ice cream, he's at the wrong booth. This dude's at his tax booth, and Jesus walks up. Tell me something about tax collectors we've learned. Are they loved? People buy them roses every day. Like, hey, I got to, hey, buddy, how you doing? No. How do they view these tax collectors? They're like, you're scum. Why are they scum? They steal money from everybody. And who are they from? Like, what people are they from? The same people that they steal money from. So if, let's say we're all sitting here tonight, right? China comes and takes us over. China's ruling America, okay? All of a sudden, China comes in and says, all right, V, you and Benny, you're going to be our tax collectors now. You go to your own people in this room and you take all their money and you give it to us. How do you feel about V and Benny now? Anybody like them? You traitors, right? You're like, you're a bunch of traitors. You're taking our money. Now that was Matthew. That's who Matthew was. In a nutshell, He was a thief. He stole from his own people. He was a traitor because he was taking that money and giving it to the Romans. He worked for them. He had no loyalty to his own people. He left his own religion. It was just basically scum, like you guys said, in the eyes of his people. And now here's Jesus, the gift of the Hebrew people to the entire world. And he walks up to this scum, this traitor, this guy who basically hung out with all these other influential people because now he's a tax collector. He reached the status. And so he was at the parties. He was drinking the drinks. He was doing everything that they were doing because he had the influence and the wealth and the power and all the good toys and the life. The life that a lot of us even dream about as we watch TV and think that that's what life is about. Matthew was living it. He was at the best parties. Had all the coolest toys. Money was never a problem for Matthew. He knew he had the coolest friends, the richest friends, and he was powerful. All because he was a traitor. All because he was a tax collector. Really, everything was going good for Matthew. I mean, in the world's eyes, like, that's awesome. Why would he ever want anything else? And there he is, literally sitting at his booth in the middle of work. Let's say Jeremy worked at, I'm just going to pick a place, Wendy's, okay? And he's across the street at Wendy's. And I go over to Wendy's, right? And I find Jeremy. And he's in the middle of flipping a burger, like literally flipping it in the air to like cook it and like mess with the fries and stuff. Like he's doing a little thing over there. He's putting a little Wendy's thing together, a little Baconator going on. A couple pieces of bacon. I'm getting hungry now. I got to move on with it. Getting stuck on the food. And so Jesus walks in and sees Jeremy. He's literally in the middle of flipping his burger. He's like, hey, dude, drop that stuff. Let's go.
Go, Jeremy.
You know, like, whoa, but I'm kind of busy here. Like, there's customers right here waiting for the burger. My manager's yelling at me like I'm in the middle of work. Well, here's the deal. Wendy's ain't going to make a ton of money, right? Matthew's making bank doing his work. And Jesus walks into the middle of that. And you know what? All Jesus had to do was say two words. He didn't give him a big, long speech. He didn't have to sit there and shake his shoulders and be like, why don't you get it? You need me. He didn't have to try to convince him. And all he did was give him one command. One command. Follow me. And the dude gets up. He drops everything in the middle of work. He drops all the fun, all the pleasure that many, many people dream about having. And he walks away. You know what? There are so many of us that think that's what life's about. And if Jesus actually walked up to us right now, and we can't even sit, I mean, I'm looking right now and there's like, what, 15 of you talking, doing other things. I don't really care. You can keep doing that. That's fine. What hurts my heart the most is that you're missing the truth. I don't care if you listen to me. But we're stuck thinking that this is what life's about because the world tells us that everywhere. If Jesus walks up to you and goes, hey, follow me, are you going to do it? Will it just take two words for you? Are you going to look back in the face of the creator of the universe and go, dude, you're worth it, here I go? Or are you going to miss out completely because you're too busy screwing around? Are you going to miss out because you're too into the junk you're doing? The fun that you're having? You're in Matthew's boat. If that's you, this is for you tonight. None of us are above this, guys. This message smacks me in the face every time I read it. And I'm a pastor. We're not past this. The defining moment of your life is when Jesus walks up to you and goes, follow me. Are you willing to get up and follow? What's it going to take to get us, even, and I'm talking to Christians too. What's it going to take to get us to actually get up and go, you're really worth it. I'm done screwing around. I'm done with this. Jesus, you are worth it. Say the word. Tell me, and I'm up on my feet, leaving everything else behind. I'll follow. I respect Matthew so much because he did probably the hardest thing we could ever do. You know that when your life hits rock bottom, it's easy to follow Jesus. When everything's going wrong, oh, I need you now, Jesus. Everything hurts. Who else am I going to turn to? You know when it's hard to follow Jesus? When you have everything you actually want or think you do. That's Matthew. It was hard. He didn't need anything else. What did he need this Jewish rabbi coming up to him telling him to follow him for? The difference is he looked at him and he saw, you really are the Son of God. I'll put my career on the line. I'll put my life on the line because you're worth it. Jesus didn't have to get emotional. He didn't have to give a big speech. He just said two words. And I pray to God for you guys. You know, the firehouse staff prays for you by name. Many of you, when you're not here, you get a phone call because we actually care when you're not here. We take it beyond that. We pray for you. You know what I pray? I pray this. I pray that when Jesus says, hey, follow me, saved or not, that you're willing to say, show me where. And I'm going to keep praying that for you. And I don't see that stopping anytime soon because I do love you guys. And because we're called to do this. I don't know if God's saying, hey, follow me tonight to you. This isn't even in my notes anymore. I don't even know where I'm at. I want you to respond. You need to respond. If God's saying, look, you've been screwing around too long. You need me. Follow me. Follow. Be a Matthew. All right, let's get back on track here. Verse 15. He says, and as he reclined at his table, at his house, in his table, many tax collectors and sinners were reclining with Jesus and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. And you're like, what are they reclining for? Are they sitting in like these lazy boys watching the Super Bowl? Like, I don't know what you picture in your head. The best thing I can picture is a similar culture that does the same thing. When I was in Afghanistan, we were invited into people's houses, and this is very similar to what the same culture did. See how they just sit around? Look how they're reclining back. That's this exact same culture that's taking place here. And these guys are just like, come on over. We'll make you some tea. We'll break bread. Look at this next. Like they just pull out tea and bread and they literally like tear the bread up and like throw it around to you. And we're just sitting around and we sat for hours and hours and hours. Like it wasn't a dinner like we had. We run to McDonald's or Taco Bell and we screw around for a few minutes and slap each other or whatever and eat. And I don't know. Maybe that's just my group of people. But whatever we do, but it's quick, right? Like we usually fly through things. We fly through our meal. In this culture, the most intimate time that you spend with people is done right here in circles like this. You bring them into your house and you lay back on those pillows and you start to talk and you share your heart with people. Now, we're looking at Jesus and he's sitting in the same situation. It says he was with his disciples and who else? Tax collectors and sinners. Well, how did the tax collectors ever end up hanging out in the house of Jesus? Hanging out with this guy who's walking around going, hey, give everything up. You think that's a very like attractive message to give people? Do you think everybody would respond like Matthew did? But he's got a house full of them. How did that happen? What do you think? Who's sitting next to Jesus? A tax collector and a sinner that decided to follow Jesus because he was worth it, Matthew. It doesn't say it in the text. I can't promise you this, but you know what? I don't see how this couldn't be that Matthew is probably the guy who talked to all his little buddies he used to hang out with in that old life. And those people were sitting around Jesus because of Matthew's influence. Now Jesus has this whole group of people that are in dire need of him. All because Matthew thought this was great news. They saw the change in his life. And there they are sitting with Jesus, reclining and talking to him. Now, when I told you that story at the beginning about going to that church, and if I had looked at those people as like pagans, I can never be around them. Like I never would have gotten the opportunity to share. And here's Jesus. He's in the same boat, right? He's sitting with these people who are sinners. And so many of us, like it's either one or the other. We either think like, I'm not hanging out with those people because they just don't know Jesus and they're bad for me. Or we're like, man, I'm just going to hang out with all the sinners I want because they're fun and I can do what they do. It seems like there's two extremes. How do you balance that? How do you balance? I get that question so often. How do I hang out with people that need Christ and not end up getting dragged into what they're doing? I'm so glad you're concerned with that. Let me tell you that first of all. I'm glad that actually concerns you. I'm glad you're thinking about it. We look at Jesus, and who does it say he was with first? Jesus and who? His disciples. And Jesus had a core group of people like you guys have, hopefully, that are Christians that surround him, that keep him accountable, that love him. And as Jesus surrounds himself by these awesome people, they're not some little exclusive clique that they never go out into the world. And so look who else is there. All of a sudden you get these tax collectors and sinners who come into this thing, and they're able to then do what? Hear the good news as they're sitting with Christ. So am I telling you tonight, hey, listen, you need to just give up all Christians, don't go to church anymore, just go hang out with unsaved people that do cocaine all the time, and you'll be fine. Go do that. No. You know that's not what I'm saying. They'll go home and tell your parents I said that, all right? It's on the internet, they can listen later. What I'm telling you is, you do need to be at church. You need to be around people who are Christ's disciples. You need to be invested in. But here's the deal. As you come to this place and as you hear the word of God and you get what this good news is, guess what? You reach a point after you've been fed a lot by a lot of people that you get off your butt and you start feeding other people. Some of us are so fat of like, not like me fat, but like fat like with gospel and learning and the Bible. Like you sat in the Sunday school classes, you've been to church, you've done all this stuff, and you're ready, but you just keep eating, 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 and you're not feeding back in anyone else. It's time to take this gospel life serious and be like, listen, Jesus had his disciples, and then what did they do? As they learned, guess what they did? They taught people that needed to know. Not in a way that said, hey, let's go do all the bad stuff you do, but come into our group. Come learn about Christ. Come hear the truth. I'm not saying throw yourself to the wolves. I'm saying, look, I don't believe in what you do, but I love you and I want you to meet this Jesus. Let's go to Jesus. There's a difference. But we need to stop just stuffing our face with being invested in and start going out and investing in some other people. And so Jesus is sitting with these people. They're reclining in his house. I think it's awesome that he's just like laying there. Like they're just chilling, eating. And you're like, they're not at church. They're not at some big like camp group thing. They're just chilling. They're hanging out at his house. You know what that tells me? That a gospel life is all about the gospel. Even reclining in his house eating a meal, he's there ministering to people. Do you have to be at church to do it? Nope. Do you have to be at some big student life conference to do it? Nope. Do you have to be a missionary to do it? Mm-mm. But should you be doing it all the time? Wherever you are, whatever you're doing? Yes. If you're living a gospel life, you will. Because that's what a gospel life is. You are consumed by the gospel and you're always breathing this good news, no matter where you are. Every moment becomes an opportunity for you to share the gospel. And so Jesus is doing that. I love it. And so he's got all these people around. And it says, for there are many who followed him. And why wouldn't you? Once you see that he's the Son of God, why wouldn't you follow him? But yet I look at us sometimes and I'm like, it's kind of hard to still follow, you know? Sometimes I get bored of hearing the same thing over. Sometimes it's like routine. Sometimes I just get caught up in other stuff. These people follow. Verse 16 says, and the scribes of the Pharisees, here they come again, guys. It's like in every story. It's those guys. The scribes of the Pharisees, when they saw that he was eating with sinners and tax collectors, said to his disciples, here's that snotty question, why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners? Here's the deal with that. You're always going to be asked that question. You're living for Christ, you're going to have people get in your face. And some of us are like, no, nobody ever gets in my face. You're probably not living for Christ. Oops. If you're not meeting resistance in your Christian walk, maybe you need to live a little more wild for Christ. Maybe you're just fitting in so well with the group around you that the gospel never butts heads with the sin that's in all of us. Jesus is sitting here, and this question is asked by these guys. And verse 17, here's his answer. It's like this duh question, like answer. Like, really? And when Jesus heard it, he said to them, those who were well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. I came not to call the righteous, but sinners. So when was the last time you woke up in the morning and your mom like storms in your room and feels your head and she's like, oh, you don't have a fever. Let's go to the doctor. Come on. You're like, V, it sounds like you don't have a cough. You look really healthy. Come on, we gotta go to the doctor. Like, it makes no sense. That's dumb, right? And Jesus is making this like, duh, answer to them. Like, why would you take a non-sick person to a doctor? If they're healthy, they don't need a doctor. Why would I be hanging out with just the healthy people? Jesus came and he says, I came to call not the righteous. Righteous people don't need salvation. But guess what? He's being a little sarcastic. Raise your hand if you're righteous in this room. Please don't raise them because you ain't. It's this little catch 22. Like, none of us, none of you, because Jesus was, none of you are righteous. I came to call sinners. I came to bring salvation to people who need it. And guess what? Every single one of us in this room needs a salvation because we ain't righteous. Now, here's the deal. We could talk about this till we're blue in the face. But until we really get what Jesus is saying here, it's just talk. I feel like we do it a lot. I feel like we talk about it every Wednesday and every Sunday. But when are we really, really, really going to buy into the fact, A, that this is really good news, and B, that it's such good news that when Jesus looks me in the face and says, follow me, I'm going to get up and I'm actually going to do it. And for you, that might not be get saved. Maybe you're already saved. Maybe what Jesus is saying is, I'm calling you to go to the mission field. What's it going to take? What's it going to take to convince you that when Jesus says, hey, I want you to be a pastor, you lay your life down and be like, all right, Jesus, I'll do it. Hey, I want you to be a nurse on the mission field and share Christ with the sick in the middle of Africa. Okay, it's scary, Jesus, but I'm going. Here I go. Hey, I want you just to walk across your own hallway in your own house and tell your brother or sister who's lost about Jesus. Okay, Jesus, I'm going. I want you to straighten your life up because you look like the world. All right, Jesus, whatever you tell me, I'm following. Like, I don't know where you're at. Will you just stop moving for 1 second, guys? I don't know where you're at, but I do know this. Every single one of us needs this gospel. I don't care where you're at in the spectrum. Will you just ask God tonight what it is he needs to do in your heart? Because if you're sitting here going, I don't need this message, like I'm good with God right now, you're wrong. He's doing something in all of us all the time, or you've reached the highest point of like, you're Jesus. What is it he's calling you for tonight? What is he telling you to follow him in? And will you put aside whatever it is holding you back from this right now and actually listen? Close your eyes for a second. I'll let you do your thing. I've done my thing. Nothing else I can do here. God's going to do a work in your heart. Just ask him to do that. Will you just ask him, Lord, what is it? If you're mad at him, tell him you're mad. If you're wondering or doubting, tell him. If you really don't see what it is in you that needs to be mended by Christ, ask him. Be like, show me, because I think I'm okay right now. And if you're here tonight and you're like, man, I want to know who this Jesus is. Like, I really want to know. And there's leaders all across the back. Get up. Don't wait. Jesus looked at Matthew and was like, hey, follow me. He got up and he went. And this is your chance. Go ahead. Get up and walk to the back. These leaders would love to pray with you and show you how you can know Christ. And if you're like, okay, Rob, I'm ready. Like, I'm at that point. I want to live this gospel life. He's saying, follow me. I'm going. I'm doing it tonight. Get up. Matthew got up. Walk to the back and be like, pray with me, leader. Like, I want to get this straight with Christ. When we leave here, if you still have a question in your heart and need someone to pray with, please know that we're always here. You can grab us after the service. You can call us throughout the week. We love you. We want to see you living for Christ because there's no other way to do it. Will you pray with me? Christ, we do love you so much. Lord Jesus, thank you for every student and leader you brought to this place tonight. God, thank you for your bold message that you gave us, the example through Matthew, the life of Christ. This truth that you're sharing with us tonight, Lord, and it might be hitting some of us in the face, it might be going over some of our heads, but Christ, we trust your Spirit, and I pray that your Spirit grab every single heart in this room, mine included. God, don't let us walk out these doors and not see your face and know why this gospel's so good. Father, if there's people that you are calling here, Lord, that you're saying, follow me, I pray your Spirit would urge them forward, that they would follow. Whatever it might be, God, that they would follow you. We love you. It's in Christ's name we pray. Amen.